I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on what's left of this Thursday morning. A couple of texts here. No, the only thing Virginia has is a state lottery. I lived in Manassas and Fredericksburg back in 89 to 91. Squirrel Vereen, anything about Northern Virginia now? And, of course, they have capitalized the Northern as the metro has extended all the way out to Dulles. One could get to the train and be in front of the Capitol in about an hour, if you're lucky. If you're lucky. I still do the metro when I'm up there. It's not quite as the trains are newer, but it's wasn't as safe as it was when I lived up there. But that's a story for another time. Joining us now on the line, he's our returning champion today early. Thank him for making time for us this morning, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, how are you?
A little dreary today, but other than that, happy to be here.
Hey, thanks for making time. Well, we'll just ask you this right off. Any surprises, any reaction to what we saw Tuesday?
No, not really. I mean, I think the turnout was, you know, everybody's been talking about turnout just being abysmal overall. The weather certainly didn't help with that, but it's disappointing to see, you know, that low a turnout. And I'm not really sure what us as candidates are going to do or the party's going to do to try to increase that. We're going to have to give some serious thought to what we can do to energize and entertain the voters to get them to show up and vote. It's a challenge. Looking at the amount of money spent. Well, is really, really something.
Interrupt there. I'm sorry to interrupt you and talk over you, but we change it so that we have an abbreviated runoff time. And maybe that makes sense in some ways. It seems like the money's still getting spent regardless. But I guess the idea there was try to lower those costs and hurry this thing up. But it just seems like you got voters coming out of that with election fatigue.
Well, certainly the voters were fatigued. And there was so much money being spent that people did not want that runoff election period to be any longer than it had to be. And so I certainly did not hear from anybody saying, gosh, I wish we'd had more time to consider the choices here. That wasn't the case at all. And so folks were ready to get it over with, ready to get their mailboxes back and their, you know, text message, you know, quit getting text messages and just get on with it. And so we saw that. I saw a good victory, I thought, for Representative Francis Hulk Jones down in the south end of the county, of Baldwin County. It's a good thing for our delegation, some stability there when we've got a number of new members coming in to have somebody who's well-respected by leadership and certainly well-respected in the upper chamber and works well with her Senate colleagues. And so that's a good thing for Baldwin County.
I mean, we know it's going to change. We know we're going to have a new governor, and that'll be easily the biggest variable here. But do any of these other elections, to me, Catherine Robertson, I don't expect a whole lot to change from General Marshall. I have no idea what to expect with the lieutenant governor. There's some other offices we could go at commission. We can look at, everything, PSC and whatnot. But the state government, other than the gubernatorial side of things, you'll have a little different look at a minimum.
Well, I think your assessment on the Attorney General's office is spot on. I mean, Catherine's been the chief counsel for General Marshall for the longest time. I mean, it's partly her staff in that office now. And so I expect to see a lot of stability there. The ag commissioner race was interesting. The Alpha endorsement, I think, swayed a lot there. But I think you've not heard the last of Christina Warren McKinnis. She is a bright, shining star, just an innovator. And I think you'll see her either in an administrative administration position somewhere, or I'm just not sure. But she's a bright star. You'll see her around still. The lieutenant governor's going to be interesting. As the legislature really through some rule changes, really took a lot of the authority of that office back for the legislature to have that authority. Still the presiding officer of the Senate, and that's going to be an interesting position for former Chairman Wall to be in. It's heavy on the parliamentary procedure and heavy on relationships with individual members, and we'll just have to see how he does in that. I also think that there's still a chance of some residency challenges for him that may or may not pop up, and so we'll have to see how all of that works its way out moving forward.
Yeah, that one won't go away. That is looming, a residency challenge. But I can you imagine the guy wins the vote and they take it away from him? I mean, where do you go from there? That is hard for me to grasp.
It will be hard for a lot of people to grasp, and so I'm not sure that that's a position that the party wants to be in. It may end up being up to the courts, and it may. It may be disposed of the same way that coaches' residency challenges were and are going to be disposed of, which is, he's found to have, lived in the state and move on. But I think the set of facts is different for John Wall than it is for Coach. And so those are decisions that the party and the courts will make, and we'll just end up kind of living with on the back end.
Let me just ask you if your understanding of this, because and I've had this explained to me. It's not really up to the courts. It'll come down on the legislature. You, this is the argument from some of the Tuberville guys, is you could run for governor. There's no constitutional requirement. Running and ballot access are different from actually being governor or lieutenant governor. So what happens is, and I may need to kind of freshen up on this, it doesn't go to the courts. It comes to the legislature, and the legislature convenes and they establish a commission, a joint commission or something of that, a committee, and they look at all the evidence and they hold the proceedings, and then the entire body determines if it fits the bill of the Alabama Constitution. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's the way it's been explained to me.
Well, this is uncharted territory, and I don't know the answer to that. I'm not going to pretend to know. It's not, that's an obscure part of the Constitution that I don't think has been used before, and so we'll have to research that and figure out what the answer is. I know that those questions linger, and that there are folks like us sitting around kind of talking about how does this work out, and what is the, what is the outcome? That's something that I wish certainly could have been resolved prior to the election, heck, prior to candidacy, is to determine, hey, are you eligible for this or not, so that you don't put the voters in a situation where they feel disenfranchised after the fact, correctly or not, constitutionally or not. It's not a great situation for voters to be in, where they feel like this person's been duly elected, but then is deemed, disqualified, after the fact. That's unfortunate, and that's not good for a republic.
No, it's especially if you take it out of the hands of the voters. This will be national headlines. If there is a residency challenge, and it would be adjudicated by the party first. And then the courts may get their say, but, Williams explained to me when they put this in the Constitution in 1901, it was kind of a throwback to Reconstruction, and you had carpetbaggers who came down to Alabama and they won elected office, and they wanted to protect against something like that from ever happening again. And that's why they put that in there. But the like I said, it's not about if you can run or not. That's up to the parties. That's up to, I don't know what the election law says, but the residency part in the Constitution pertains to being governor, pertains to you walking out on the Capitol steps on Inauguration Day, putting your hand on the Bible, being sworn in, and having that transfer of power. Can that power be transferred to that individual?
And this is why I listen to your show, Jeff. I learn stuff too. So that's something we're going to have to go through and figure out how that works and what that looks like.
Because it's going to put you guys in a tough space. I mean, if there is a legitimate case here and we didn't really adjudicate this as voters because it just kind of came out of nowhere. Well, it didn't come out of nowhere. I mean, this had been festering for a while, but it was always kind of dismissed as, no, he believes that he meets the qualifications. And I think the steering committee already looked at both of these one time and said, no, we don't think there's anything there. We're not even going to hear it.
Well, again, that's something that is, you know, if we are charged with making a determination as a legislature, whether that's the body, you know, both chambers or just the Senate, again, I'll have to go look and research that. But if we're charged with doing that, then we'll, you know, discharge the duties of our office and do that and make that decision. I just, again, wish that that was not something that was even a question. I wish that we would be certain of those things prior to a candidate announcing his candidacy. Heck, I look at it not all that different than eligibility for the High School Athletic Association, right? Make a determination. Are you going to be able to serve in this spot or not? And not wait till after an election's taken place to end up in a situation where you potentially disqualify somebody after the fact.
It's just the world we live in and the world of the 1901 Constitution, and you see it come up from time to time where – well, we weren't even thinking like IVF, right? Or, yep, you know, stuff like that, that we weren't really thinking about this when we put in in the late 1800s, a wrongful death law. And is that a human being or is that a piece of property, those embryos? And so these like laws got to be looked at some point through the lens of a modern Alabamian.
Well, and we certainly have no problem amending the Constitution in Alabama, so maybe it does need to be updated. That's just something we'll have to look at. I apologize for not being better prepared to answer your question.
I bet you're glad you brought it up, but I figured since you brought it up, why not proceed? Hey, historic horse racing seems to, for whatever reason, has been discovered here in Mobile like last week. But this is something you guys been kind of grappling with for a while. And you know, I think what Bobby Singleton tried to make it just outright legal. Now the push here, and I always kind of scoff at this. Well, we got this loophole with historic horse racing, so let's go ahead and just legalize all gambling, so we don't have to use these loopholes. But in the deal there, like, we don't have gambling. Well, not yet, at least. We probably will get it soon. But in the meantime, if you're really worried about these loopholes, you close the loopholes, and historic horse racing is a loophole.
Well, it is, and it's legal in certain counties in Alabama that have specific constitutional amendments that permit it. The issue is that, you know, again, as technology, you know, changes, they have figured out how to make it look like a slot machine, right? And feel like a slot machine and not, you know, not historic horse racing. And so when that was approved by the voters, it probably looked different than a slot machine. Yet here we are, and it is legal in those areas through a local constitutional amendment. The problem is it conflicts with the state's constitution, and so we are at this impasse. And again, we get back into the details of a gaming bill and a gaming constitutional amendment, and what that ends up saying, and what is legal and what is not. And as is so often the case, it turns into a, you know, who exists now? Do they get to continue to operate? Do you shut them down? Where does the money go? Who wins? Who loses? What does the competition look like if you legalize it further? And then what other types of gaming is allowed? It's a nightmare. I would be perfectly content to never talk about gaming in Alabama again, because it's complicated and because it sucks all the oxygen out of the room. And at the end of the day, we have more important things to focus on in my mind. And as long as this is out there, as long as we talk about it, we don't ever get anything else done.
Well, this came up a lot during the AG's race, and like, how do you deal with this? And then the problem, a lot of local prosecutors, district attorney offices, they're just not interested in enforcing the law, cracking down on any of this. They don't even know what's legal and what isn't. And so you lean on the attorney general office, and the problem with that is, well, these are misdemeanors. Do you really want the highest law enforcement office in the land enforcing these misdemeanor, you know, charges here, and because it becomes sort of a lopsided use of resources. When you do have real crime, real problems, real legal issues confronting the state, and it falls on that office to go after these like backroom sort of speakeasy casinos.
Right. And General Marshall's done a fair bit of that. We'll have to see what soon to be General Robertson does with those issues. But you bring up a valid point, and it's one of the reasons that we, in every gaming bill that has existed here recently, there have been increases in penalties for illegal gaming. Right. And so some of those operations that are currently sanctioned by local constitutional amendments have been allowed in current versions of the gaming bill to continue to operate. But what you've seen is significant increases in penalties for other operations that are not operating under the color of law. And so that's always been a component to try to clarify some of that. But make no mistake, in doing that, the legislature is very much picking winners and losers, is stifling competition in that industry, which I, for one, think is an okay thing to do. To the extent gaming exists in Alabama, I don't want it to expand. And so I'm okay with stifling, you know, that type of competition. I don't want broader gaming in Alabama. But that's just me. Others want something very different.
Well, let me interrupt real quick because we're running out of time here. But, you know, at face value, you look at the loopholes here, historic horse racing or whatever, electronic bingo. And it's these entities trying to maneuver around the law. They're operating, they may be operating within the letter of the law, but it's against the spirit of the law. It really is. If they're going to operate that fashion, but you're going to sit down with these same people who are not operating in good faith, I'm convinced, with the state, and try to hammer out and negotiate a some kind of gambling agreement, deal, whatever you want to call it, well, why are you operating? I mean, like, why do these guys get any benefit of the doubt who are operating now when it comes to this issue or when it's going to come up next year if they're doing what they're doing now?
Math. I mean, it's just that simple. It's math. It's if you are going to try to pass a piece of legislation, you have to get the votes to pass it. The question is, how do you achieve those votes? And oftentimes you obtain those votes by working with legislators who represent those areas. And so, you know, we can either continue to do what we're doing right now, which is, you know, this kind of hodgepodge of local constitutional amendments, or we can try to get a bigger handle on this and try to address it from a statewide standpoint. But if you're going to do that, you're going to have to placate the senators and representatives that represent those areas in order to get the math to work. Or we can just leave it alone. I'm perfectly fine leaving it alone as well. Again, it takes all the oxygen out of the room. But the answer to your question is math.
Senator, we'll leave it there, but you're always very kind to come on this program. And thanks for coming on today early.
Absolutely. I'll try to do some research and have some better answers on the constitutionality of residency.
Yeah, if it's coming up, it's coming. So I guess we better have that hard discussion we're going to have. But thanks again.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
All right. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 1065.
There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows